Men Club.
Welcome to Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. I'm your host, Bernie Crooks, from the law firm Littman Crooks. We've got offices in White Plains, New York, Fishkill, New York, and New York City, or you can visit us online at littmancrooks.com. Today, our guest is Mohan Mehra, who's the president of the ARC of the United States of America. Mohan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bernie. Good to be here.
It is wonderful to have you. I know you've got a long, accomplished career of helping people with disabilities. And I guess we'll start with what is the ARC? To you and me, I guess the ARC is so much a part of our families and we understand it. But to mainstream America, explain to them what does the ARC do and where did it come from? Is it a national organization? Does every state have one? Tell us a little bit about it.
Bernie, the ARC is the largest national organization that supports and serves people with intellectual developmental disabilities. We are actually the eighth largest charity network in the nation behind organizations like YMCA, United Way, Salvation Army. So it's a very large network. It is really 700 chapters around the country, and they're all affiliated with the ARC of the United States. Most states, actually 38 out of the 50 states, have state ARC chapters and also local chapters. These chapters have been incorporated as separate 501c3s. They operate with their own boards and serve local communities. So the ARC is really all about chapters, and our face to the country is really the local chapters that exist in most communities around the nation.
Now, you mentioned 38 states have a chapter. Does that mean the families who have children with developmental disabilities in those other states, those other 12 states, don't receive services, or they just don't get them from the ARC?
No, they receive services. The delivery of services, Bernie, varies across the country. Not all ARC chapters actually deliver services. About two-thirds of the ARC chapters deliver services like, employment support, residential, recreation. But a third of them around the country do only advocacy. What that means is they would advocate for legislation, they would advocate for health care, for housing, so on, but they do not deliver hard services. So in those communities, there are other organizations, there are state DD organizations, there are other local agencies that deliver services. So in every community in this nation, there is a service provider. The ARC happens to be the largest service provider in the country.
Now, does the ARC of the USA decide what role the state chapter plays, or is that up to the state?
No, it's pretty much up to the state. Every state, again, has a state chapter. Not every state. Those states that have a state chapter, the local chapters are affiliated with the state chapter. So in most cases, I think it's generally true, the state chapter's role is advocacy at the state level. But they also unite the local chapters. They would meet once a year, get together. The best example of that is New York, which is probably the largest and the strongest network in the nation, where they meet twice a year. And local chapters actually pay nominal dues to the state chapter. But the state chapter, the value the state chapter would provide to a local would be advocacy at the state level. And the national organization, if you think along those lines, provided the advocacy at the national level, in addition to other things that we do that we can get into. But really, what people think of the ARC of the U.S. is really providing legislative advocacy at the national level.
So you've used two terms often in the few minutes we've been speaking. One is advocacy, and two is services. What's the difference between those two, and what exactly do each of them mean?
Advocacy is really advocating for your children, family member, if you will, in terms of getting legislation passed, whether it's protecting Medicaid right now with what's going on in Washington, whether it's protecting SSI, Social Security, any changes in laws there, whether it's at the state level in SEDs, Educational Department. So it's really advocacy for that and advocacy for healthcare, which is what we went through in the last 2 years with the Affordable Care Act. Services actually providing hard services to individuals, be it early intervention programs, school programs, recreational programs, employment supports, being actually running group homes or supported living arrangement, providing guardianship services. So the service gamut runs the whole gamut, and those are really funded. About 80% of our services are funded through Medicaid dollars. So advocating for Medicaid is the single most important thing right now, because 80% of all services are funded through Medicaid.
So the two really do work hand in hand, because you can't have the services without the advocacy.
Absolutely.
And I guess I pretty much know the answer to this question, but in the current economic climate, I mean, you've been doing this for 3-4 decades? Long time, right?
Yeah, about, yeah, 2 decades, not three, four.
2 decades, okay. Yeah. Have you seen tougher economic times?
No, these are very demanding, because the country economically is not in a good place. And the other thing is that the outlook is not very good either for the next 5 years. So as we come out of this, nobody in the field or in the economists expect they're going to come out quickly. So I think we're into a fundamental change that's occurring right now in terms of entitlement, funding, and support. And in that I mean Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare. And there's a fight going on in terms of how do we protect those three. And it goes without saying, the senior citizens in this country vote. They have very strong voice for protecting Social Security and Medicare. The Medicaid voice is really disabled and poor, and that has not been as strong. So we are making an extra effort to protect our funding for our services.
So without the advocacy, people who are receiving services shouldn't expect or assume that legislators will look out for them.
That is very true. As a matter of fact, the ARC in the last year, nationally, that's one area we're focusing on. We have a campaign underway right now called Don't Cut Our Lifeline. And that is the name of the campaign. We're trying to rally people. And actually, in the last 2 months, we've actually had families go to the White House and meet with staffers. And that has really played a role, because advocacy, after you cut through all this, is individual stories. How Medicaid, or if for that matter, any kind of support, is changing people's lives. And that's really what it's all about. And when we are able to show actual stories and actual life situations, legislators in Washington are really moved and touched and see the value of what difference these resources make. So, you know, it is a very important time, not just nationally, and we need this voice at the local level as well. The ARC is a grassroots organization, as we have said, and the families out here in, you know, White Plains, New York, or for that matter, anywhere in the country, they need to really advocate with their local chapters, both at the state and national level. So this is kind of the campaign that's underway right now, and we're really trying to accelerate that. The other thing we're doing with the campaign, because as you can imagine, in Washington, we're building coalitions with organizations like the aging community, which has similar interests in terms of long-term services and supports, with other disability organizations, UCP, AD, you know, Association of Persons with Disabilities, so that have a stronger voice in this area, because all of those organizations are really impacted by Medicaid funding.
I think the coalitions, especially with the aging organizations, is critical, because in this recessionary environment, and as you stated, that it could be 5 years before we come out of it, there's limited dollars. There's not as much tax revenue coming in because the economy isn't as good. And legislators, frankly, are faced with a difficult choice, because if there's a finite pot of money and you've got many worthy causes, I mean, there must be hundreds if not thousands of charities and worthy organizations, I guess it must be a pretty big challenge for you to distinguish the ARC and the kids with disabilities from some of these other major charities. I mean, is that a challenge?
It is a challenge, and I'm sure if you sit on the legislator side, it's a pretty strong challenge. But we have the thing that the ARC does very well in Washington is we are well known through our Congress in terms of being a very strong organization in terms of advocating, knowing how Congress works, how we work with the committees, and being the expert in the field. And staffers in the Hill really want is an organization like the ARC that knows the history, knows what services are all about, and we've been around for 60 years, the oldest organization of its kind that serves people with disabilities. And this organization is a very strong historically, going back to President Kennedy's 63, when he attended the first NARC convention in Washington. So we're full of rich history, and I think families know that, and I think people in Congress know that as well.
Now, everyone in this country, or I think by now, has heard of autism and the near epidemic we have in this country with people now being diagnosed with autism at almost an alarming rate compared to even 10, 20 years ago. Does that help or does it hurt? And what I mean by that, does it mean that in order to get money, you have to use the A word to the exclusion, hopefully not, of others? How does that play into your efforts?
Well, the way I like to talk about it and is that the face of intellectual and developmental disability in this country is changing. And over the next 10 years, it's going to change even more. If you look at the demographics, we have like 400,000 people nationally with Down syndrome. Today, there are 1 million to 1.5 million people with autism spectrum disorder. And if you look at their age and project out for 20 years, they are getting to be the young adults and will demand housing and other employment services. So the handwriting is clearly on the wall that we have to really serve the entire community. It is not just people with cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, mental retardation, but autism is a very important part of that. So the ARC is embracing of all of it. That's what makes the ARC unique. There's two things that make the ARC unique. One is that we're not diagnosis specific. We serve all of these diagnoses. Second, as we provide most of our chapters, as I've said earlier, provide direct services, and they are large organizations incorporated. The disability, other organizations like National Down Syndrome Society, Autism Speaks, Autism Society of America, they're all advocacy organizations, very strong in what they do, but they're also realizing that they have to start to advocate for housing and employment and things like that. So we work with these communities very well, we've done some survey work where clearly, if you poll our network, we did a study last year, 5,000 families around the nation, and if you ask them and this was among family members and caregivers, and ask them what is the diagnosis of the individual with developmental disability, the highest number is autism. 34% was autism. Down syndrome was 20%. CP was 16%. So clearly, it is already happening that the numbers are large, and so we really have to work with these communities, and we're starting to. And I think over the next 5 years, you will see a lot more coalitions between the ARC and autism community, and for that matter, and with the Down syndrome community, we've had coalitions in the past. With UCP, we had a joint disability policy collaboration. We used to do the advocacy together. So this is going to continue to happen this way, I think.
I'm Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. Our guest this week is Mohan Mehra, the president of the ARC of the United States, and we're talking about re-energizing family advocacy and what that means. And specifically, we're talking about now about how to educate legislators. And I know that many legislators who aren't touched by this personally, who don't have a family member with a disability, sometimes it's difficult to connect with them because if you're not living it, sometimes it's more difficult to truly understand what the needs are. Do you find that sometimes the way to connect is to mention autism and the autistic spectrum? Is that sort of the entree? Or are they equally as receptive to saying you represent families with intellectual developmental disabilities?
No, I think you have to be diagnosis specific. And like that's what I meant by the changing face. And autism is a very important part, so is Down syndrome. But as the numbers are going in terms of what the sheer numbers are with the autism community. And we're in a period of change. And when you look at it from the family perspective, a lot of these children with autism have younger parents just because they are younger children. And there's a whole different dynamic, and that's what I mean by energizing that group of families. How do we do that? We can talk about that, but that to me is really what's needed over the next 10, 15 years. It is these moms and dads and family members of the young kids and youngsters in high school with autism, plus the other developmental disabilities, to advocate and maintain the supports that we currently have.
So let's talk about that a little, because guys like you and me and the wonderful president we have here at the Westchester ARC, Cheryl Frischman, we're not going to be around forever. So how do we get this to the next generation to realize that the services that we have are not necessarily something that is going to be handed to the next generation on a silver platter? That we have fought for these and we're going to have to fight harder going forward. How do we deliver that message?
You kind of have to look back before you look forward. I think in the 60s, the battle was on education. And public law, you know, 142 won the right for special education. And that, I wouldn't want to say this, but that battle has been won. And the art played a very important role in that. Today, every kid has a right to free and appropriate public education. It doesn't matter what your disability is. So in a way, that battle, you know, families and young moms and dads really are continuing that, but the legislative battle has been won. The next battle that we're now fighting is in the whole area of community inclusion. What that means is employment, and what that means is housing. So I really think that those are the two areas where we need to engage families on. And I think those are a little harder, because when you think about it, you know, education is funded through, public education is funded through government funding. When you talk about employment, you really need partnerships with employers, private employers, even government as an employer. But so that's a different fight. But on the other hand, it should be easier, because employers are looking for employees. And if we can train people to do jobs that they can do, and if we can find these niches, it should be a good marriage. But this is easier said than done. That is the battle that's being fought right now. Housing is in a whole other dimension, where, you know, we have residences. We don't want to build institutions anymore, obviously, but nevertheless, there is a trend right now in the country where what I will call planned communities, where they're developing these communities, and the autism groups are leading some in some ways. They want to develop condominiums with 20 units where 40 people with autism can live together. Now, that is becoming very controversial, because in some of the people in our movement think that's going back to segregated living. So this fight is going to go on in the next 2 years, and we're engaged, the ARC is engaged in that right now. We've set up a national group to look at this whole issue, and with engaging families from, you know, all around, as well as professionals. So I think families need to help on those two fronts, as those the whole area of employment and housing become very important, and as people with autism, Down syndrome, other intellectual developmental disabilities are actually out in the community. And it's no longer the case that they are hidden. They are out in the community, but the challenge now is how to have them be productive and taxpaying them in some cases of our society. So it will have to be that fight. And I think that is starting to happen in the area of employment. But we need broader partnerships. We need to work with the private sector on that. And that is something new for the ARC and for you know, other communities. But there are some very silver linings. I mean, the ARC, this last year, we got a $3 million grant from Walmart. And that's one of the things the ARC is focusing on, is to get large national organizations to be able to provide resources through the ARC. And the ARC doesn't keep the $3 million. We distribute those monies to our chapters around the nation. And those monies were distributed to, I think, 110 chapters by, you know, through an RFP process. But nevertheless, that's the kind of thing a national organization can do, is bring resources and help chapters. So that is one of the new areas that we've started to focus on.
You mentioned the issue of segregated housing. Generally speaking, does the ARC take positions on controversial issues like that?
Very much so. The ARC is guided by what I call our values and our position statements. We take the work of position statements very seriously. And we position statements are approved by our Congress of Delegates, which is the governing body for the ARC of the United States. We meet once a year at a convention. There is a committee of the board that is solely working on policies and position statements that engages people and professionals from all around the country, from very well-known people in academia, families, professionals. So on housing, you bring up housing, that is one area where, you know, position statements, you kind of have to keep up with the times. And our current position statement on housing is not very clear on something like these planned communities, as an example. That's why we're re-examining that. At the convention next couple of weeks, we're meeting in Denver in the middle of September. This is going to be a topic for discussion, and we're going to do an open mic session where we get people an opportunity to express their views, and then the group working on the position statement on housing and employment, which, by the way, are coming up are for renewal next year. So that work will go on. So I think the ARC is, to your point, very, very clearly guided by our position statements.
You know, one of the things I've learned over the years is that if you have a room full of 100 people and you make a statement, 50 of them will be happy and 50 will be unhappy. So when the ARC takes positions, is there some type of educational effort that goes out so that all members know that all views were considered and this is why we're going in this direction?
Very much so. Our process tries to be as inclusive as you possibly can. For example, this position statement on housing and employment, which will be voted on next October in Washington, our next NEC convention, the process is starting this year, this month, with input from folks at the convention. Then we set up a work group from the Policy and Positions Committee that has representatives from different parts of the country. Then those drafts of those position statements are sent to every one of our chapters around the country. And that happens. There's a very strict, well laid out timeline, and they respond back, and that's get factored in. So we try to be as inclusive. It's hard to get everybody engaged, but I can tell you, having been around, I can remember a position statement on sexuality. Last time we visited that at the National Convention, it was a very, very emotional discussion, as you can imagine, but it was important to have. And I fully expect that discussion on employment, given the whole discussion on workshops and those kinds of work environments that's going on right now in Washington, and housing, is going to be very controversial in that sense. We're going to have very strong views on both sides. But that's what the art does. But I have seen from my experience, when these positions are adopted, I have seen our states and our local chapters extensively use those position statements. We provide them to every member of the Congress. Whenever we do a public policy session in Washington every year in April, where we invite people from around the country, families who'd actually go and meet with their legislators on the Hill, but we update and provide them all position statements and appropriate material. So a lot of effort goes into work on positions.
Let's talk about families a little bit, Mohan. And our guest this week is Mohan Mehra, the president of the ARCO of the United States. And this is Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. I'm your host, Bernie Crooks, from the law firm Littman Crooks. What can families do to get more involved under the title of Reenergizing Family Advocacy? And how important is it to tell a story, a real-life story, as opposed to saying, here are the statistics, compared to a live person coming in there and telling you what's going on in their life?
Well, you're right, and that's why I mentioned earlier, this is all about stories, and ARC is all about creating opportunities. I mean, we've just rebranded our organization in the last 6 months, and our new tagline is Achieve With Us, and that whole idea being that people are achieving and their dreams, and the ARC is helping create opportunities so people can achieve. In terms of families getting engaged, I think the stories of the individual stories are very powerful, but I would encourage, even though there may be a perception, and I think there is, that the ARC supports older families. That is really not true. 30% of, we've done all kinds of survey of our chapter network, but 35% of our chapters actually serve preschoolers and kids less than 6 years old. And another 35% of our chapters serve people, kids in high school age through recreational programs, family counseling, that kind of thing. It is important for younger families to get involved in our chapter locally. As I said, we have 700 chapters around the country. I'm not saying every community in the country has it, but Westchester is a very good example. We have a very good ARC chapter here. And there is, I would encourage families to just get involved with the chapter locally. Every ARC chapter is run by volunteers. Families have played a very important role. Most ARC chapters, the board of directors, are majority of them are family members. So they play a very important role. So get involved in a local ARC chapter. Try to get involved through a committee. Try to become a member. You'll get a feeling, you'll get a sense for what's happening locally. You'll also get a sense and a lot of information nationally what we're doing. And in this day and age of electronic communications, social media, there's wonderful information sources out there that if you're involved in an organization, you can access and benefit from. So I think that's an important step. And then you can help, because then I keep telling younger families, the thing that's so wonderful today is something like social media. You don't have to go meet people at night for meetings. You can really communicate and channel energy and people very easily through Facebook and stuff like that. And I think one of the things the ARC is trying to do is really get more people engaged, for example, on the national Facebook page for ARC. And I can, give you examples of that. So I think that's one way of getting families engaged locally.
Now, ARC is a membership organization, right?
Yes.
So what does it mean to be a member, and how does someone become a member?
Well, you become a member, if you're a member of a local chapter of the ARC, you're automatically a member of the national organization, as long as that chapter is affiliated with the national organization. To use the ARC name, you have to be affiliated with the national organization. So, and so it really, membership is all about at the local level. So that's what I meant. You pay, you know, nominal dues, every chapter is different, $10, $20 a month to become a member. Well, what do you get? As I indicated, you're part of a community that share this whole common interest in the area of the services of people with disabilities. You will elect and govern that organization and have a very important say in what the future of the ARC is. And then through the local chapters at the national level, the voting membership at the national level is the chapters of the ARC. And then they send delegates to our national convention every year to vote on things like position statements, our bylaws, which are voted on by our membership. But for a typical individual, what membership means is really at the local level. And then if you're interested, obviously, you could be a delegate from that chapter at the national convention. And a lot of, like myself, that's what I did. And that's a lot of people who want to get involved at state and national levels. Do that. But the membership organization, the power is that you literally control what that organization does. And I think it is very important, especially in the times we are in. One of the things I get worried about is what, Bernie, you mentioned earlier about the economy and in terms of what's going to happen to funding. I really believe that we're into a period where chapters of the ARC have to think of things what I call wealth creation. What that means is we have to develop sources of funding other than purely Medicaid. And that means, you know, generating works and income from businesses we run. That means bringing private individual monies to the table. Some families have resources, some don't. But this is a very tricky area. And I think we need leadership from families to say, okay, how can we make this work? There are some states in this country where they are actually taking this a lot farther than New York, because New York has had a lot of supports and a lot of resources in the past. Some states have not. So out of necessity, they have found ways to channel and develop new resources. And I think that is one area where families and members can guide this organization in terms of how will we fund the services that we will need over the next 20 years.
ARC of the United States. What does ARC stand for?
It used to be, you know, if you go back in history, it used to be literally ARC was the Association for Retarded Citizens. And then, as you can imagine, it was founded in 1950, and it was called NARC, National Association of Retarded Citizens. Over the years, the word retarded has taken on a very negative connotation, and rightly so. So people have used the word the ARC as nobody calls it ARC anymore, and we even thought about changing the name of this organization some years ago, but felt that we had some equity in ARC as a descriptor, as a metaphor. And what we have done through this rebranding effort is to say what the ARC is, an organization that supports people. And never use it as an ARC. It is not an acronym. It is a word. And the imagery of the ARC is the notion of, you know, the arc of your lifetime. And if you look at our new logo, it has the curvature of, you know, support, and it has some burst of energy. So that's the notion. So we're trying to create the word ARC to stand for this organization and do away with ARC. Now, having said that, there are chapters around the nation still that use ARC, that use Associated Retarded Citizens, very few. And in this rebranding effort, the thing that I'm happy about is already in 6 months, 300 of our 700 chapters have changed their names and logos to the national logo. 300 of 700. And that is pretty remarkable. Our goal is to have two-thirds of our chapters, another 50 by the end of this year. So my hope is that, my vision is that over the next 3-4 years, every chapter of the ARC in this country will have the same look, the similar name, so that we could be as well-known, as easily understood as the American Red Cross. That's my hope.
Moong, we've got about a minute left on the show. Just give me some final thoughts you have for families that are involved, how they can do more, and if you're sort of thinking about getting involved, what you can do to be a part of our community.
Well, if you have a child with a disability, I know how hard and how challenging it is. But in this era of information, easy access, the internet, get involved in the local art chapter. You will be amazed at the people you'll meet, the dedication you'll see, and the information sources, both at your local chapter and through them the national organization. And I think you will find a lot of ways to contribute. And I couldn't even begin to tell you, all the way from getting involved in a local committee to, you know, being more of an advocate. This organization was built by families, and I think it will survive and thrive because of families like me, like families like you, Bernie. It's not because of professionals, and really is important. And I really believe that's what makes this organization unique. But you have to, you know, take the step forward. You'll find wonderful people in this organization. Attend the local art chapter membership meeting in your community, and then you'll see, and you'll find a lot of people with common interest. And that's how, you know, ARC was founded, by 23 families in 1950, looking for something for their kids other than institutionalization. That's the history of this organization, and we've come, look where we've come in 60 years.
Mohan Mehra, President of the ARC of the United States, thanks for all you do for all of us, and thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Bernie. Appreciate it.
I'm Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. Till next time, so long, everyone.